October 7, 2023. 1,200 Hamas gunmen pour through the barrier separating the Gaza Strip from Israel. They overrun army bases and kill more than 1,000 Israelis and foreign nationals.
They took dozens of children, bound them up, burned them, and executed them.
A family of four around the breakfast table. The father, his eye gouged out. The mother's breast cut off. The girl's foot amputated. The boy's fingers cut off before they were executed.
These accounts were used to justify an assault on Gaza that has killed at least 31,000 Palestinians, 13,000 of them children.
Finish them. Finish them. Don't ever forget what happened.
Al Jazeera's investigative unit has carried out a forensic analysis of the events of October 7. The I unit examined 7 hours of footage, much of it taken from the headcams of dead Hamas fighters. It reviewed the testimonies of hundreds of survivors and compiled a comprehensive list of victims. It found widespread war crimes, but discovered that many of the most horrific stories were untrue.
Misinformation has been used, and sometimes deliberate disinformation has been used by official spokespersons.
I'm sorry to be graphic here, but I can't see a baby here.
If you can activate people's sense of disgust, they're more likely to support dire retribution against Palestinians.
It reveals some of the victims were killed by Israeli forces.
This footage, I find very disturbing. We don't know who those individuals are. Gunmen, civilians, or hostages.
And it finds that October 7 may have changed the politics of the region forever.
I regret to say that I think it was a phenomenal success from their point of view.
October 7th has sent a very strong and clear message. No one can bypass the Palestinians.
In Palestine, there exist many thriving communities built by refugees who have already found a home there.
The Israeli settlements, known as kibbutzim, that surround the Gaza Strip, were built around the time of the creation of the State of Israel in 1948.
The immediate area around Gaza is mostly small villages, kibbutzim. In the early years, at least, kibbutzim and other villages had a defense role. And the idea was wherever you established a kibbutz like this, I mean, that would determine Israel's border. That would hold the border.
Today, the kibbutzim are prosperous farming communities.
חבל הארץ הזה התפתח מאוד מאוד יפה, מספק חלק ניכר מהתוצר החקלאי של מדינת ישראל, אוכלוסייה מגוונת, מאושרת בסך הכל עד השביעי באוקטובר.
The kibbutzim are just a few kilometers away from Gaza, where 2.3 million people live crammed in a thin strip of land, 41 kilometers long. Most are from families that once owned land on the other side of the fence.
70% of the population in Gaza are refugees, and every day they go to the fence, and they would see their lands, their homes and lands beyond this fence. And these lands belong to the Palestinians. It belonged to the Palestinians. They have lived there for millennia.
Hamas is an Arabic acronym for the Islamic Resistance Movement. It controls Gaza after winning elections that took place throughout Palestine in 2006. Hamas advocates armed resistance to Israel's occupation. Its policies and actions have resulted in its being designated a terrorist organization by many Western countries. Gaza has been under blockade since 2007.
You could never imagine life in Gaza except if you have lived in Gaza and if you have experienced life in Gaza, especially when you are a child. All of the vivid memories I have of my time back then is funerals of martyrs. Bombs. F-16s. Tanks invading our homes. Tanks invading our city. These are my memories. When you are in Gaza, you would always feel a sense that you are imprisoned. It's really a prison.
In 2018 and 2019, Gazans staged mass demonstrations demanding the right to return to the lands they once owned across the fence.
The Palestinians felt let down, they felt deserted, and they needed to remind the world that they were still there. They were still hoping to return to their homelands. The Israelis responded with force. Their snipers targeted many young men, including journalists and medics. Hundreds of Palestinians were assassinated or were murdered in this way.
I was a journalist back in Gaza, and I was there covering the March of Return. And I have seen the horrors. I saw a kid getting a bullet in his head. He was still carrying his school bag.
Israel says the killings are justified because the demonstrators pose a security threat to the south of the country.
During the Great March of Return, we went peacefully in thousands. But what was the response of the international community? Nothing. Keeping the ears and eyes always closed. Within this context, we have discussed in many times, in many sessions, what can we do? Generally, there was a consensus in the political bureau. We have to move. We have to take action. If we don't do it, Palestine will be forgotten totally and deleted from the international map. We have said it many times. The situation in Gaza is nearly to explode. And if it will happen, we will never allow it to explode inside the cities. We will direct to the eastern borders of Gaza Strip to those who are oppressing and besieging and jailing our people.
For months, Hamas trained openly for the incursion, placing videos online. The Israelis even obtain a detailed copy of the invasion plan.
Like all great strategic surprises, it was misread.
It is never the lack of intelligence information that leads to an intelligence failure. It's usually the broken intelligence cycle.
There was a woman in the primary intelligence collection agency who was responsible for intelligence regarding Hamas, who raised the flag repeatedly. And she got as high up as one could get, the chief of military intelligence. And he listened to her very carefully and said, yeah, I don't buy it. They don't have the capability.
They have cheated themselves by the perception Gaza is deterred. Gaza and Hamas is thinking how to solve their own internal problems, how to get some more money, how to get more jobs, how to open the borders, how to deal with the siege. Hamas has no time and no ability and no capability to do anything against Israel.
למדתי הרבה היסטוריה של כישלונות מודיעין, הוצאתי על זה ספרים. אני לא מכיר כישלון כל כך חמור בהיסטוריה המודרנית, לפחות של מודיעין, מ-1939.
Hamas fighters receive instructions to gather at assembly points. Only then are they given details of the attack.
Shadan
No one of the fighters have an idea about this operation. Up to minutes before the operation, it was so close and very few members of the, mainly of the military leadership and maybe one or two from the political bureau who were aware about the operation.
By now, reports of unusual movements on the Gazan side of the fence reach military intelligence and Shin Bet, Israel's internal security service.
In the early hours of the morning, there's already pretty good information that something is happening, to the point that the head of the Shin Bet and I think shortly after the chief of staff all arrive in their offices, 2-3 in the morning. And it is, again, it's written off probably as being just another exercise.
לא הועמדו כוחות בכוננות, שזה הדבר הטבעי ביותר לעשות כאשר אתה מקבל אינדיקציות שהולך לקרוא משהו שאתה לא יודע מה הולך לקרוא.
And the decision is to come back in the morning and take a look at it again. Of course, between those hours and then the attack at 6:30 a.m., it was too late.
Hamas fighters storm the main crossing point at Erez. It's one of at least 10 breaches in the fence. Thousands of rockets are fired into Israel. Paragliders cross the fence. Hamas uses boats to attack targets north of the Gaza Strip.
What is impressive about it is that there were a lot of synchronized things that needed to happen for it to succeed. Some very low-tech features up against, you know, probably the most high-tech sort of military machine anywhere out there.
Simple drones, not even particularly sophisticated ones, took out a lot of the radar, the sensors that were placed on top of all sorts of towers, took out communications nodes that were placed along the border, so that, in effect, they blinded the southern command from the get-go.
Israel's first line of defense is overwhelmed. Hamas move on to attack military bases throughout the region. Among them is a base at Paga, a few hundred meters from the fence. Chris Cobb-Smith is a human rights investigator who served 20 years in the British military. He analyzed video of the assault on Paga.
This is clearly a significant sized Israeli Defense Force base, and how they've actually managed to get through the perimeter and to take by surprise this number of Israeli Defense Force soldiers is just staggering. I just fail to see how this can be allowed to have happened. I mean, you can see here from the number of armored vehicles that are around, which don't seem to have been started up. It's just incredible how this situation ever occurred.
החמאס תופס במיטות. זה משהו שצהל אף פעם לא ראה, לא התקרב לזה, ואני חושב שבחלומות הכי איומים ונוראים של אזרחי ישראל ושל מפקדי הצבא.
هذا الفيديو بنوصله لكل العالم إن شاء الله. هذه خوزة جندي إن شاء الله بنص تمه حنجيب له. خشينا كل الدشم وخبصنا برجلينا الشريفة على كل ملجأ بقعدوا فيه. وما فيش رجال ما فيش زلام.
Military briefing documents are found on dead Hamas fighters.
They are giving written advice on what type of anti-tank rockets and missiles to use against the Merkava tank. This one is about armored personnel carriers, APCs. So what type of IEDs you can use against armored personnel carriers, infantry fighting vehicles, and armored fighting vehicles. So yeah, very sophisticated, again, very slick.
As reports of the attack begin to come through, Hamas leaders outside of Gaza gather to pray. But the leadership was as surprised as anyone by the swift collapse of the Israeli military.
Anyone who have watched this were surprised. I myself, I was totally surprised. How could this happen?
Hamas people then have shared their experience of what happened on 7th October with people I've spoken to, suggested they expected a far higher casualty rate and expected that maybe 80-90% of those who set out on the 7th of October would actually die as martyrs before they return back with hostages into Gaza City. The opposite actually happened, exactly diametrically opposed nearly, in terms of only 10 to 50% of those fighters were killed before they made it into Israeli settlements. The resistance was so underwhelming from a Hamas point of view that they had absolute freedom to maneuver.
Hamas find themselves with the towns and kibbutzim at their mercy. Just 5 kilometers from the fence, thousands of young people are gathered for a music festival.
Based on my information, they were not aware that there is a musical festival in the area.
There was a surprise. They were finding hundreds of youngsters celebrating through the whole night in the early morning, still being up out in a music festival. Hundreds of unarmed partygoers are killed. Some take refuge in the small bomb shelters that dot the main highway. They are trapped.
Hamlum,
gunmen quickly penetrate civilian communities. But their unexpected success exposes the limitations of Hamas as a military force.
Once the gunmen get access to the kibbutz, they really don't seem to know exactly what they're doing, where they're going, or what they want to achieve. They're wandering aimlessly. They're shouting to each other. They're arguing with each other. From the footage here, it looks like the soldiers clearly come under effective enemy fire, and they're not doing anything about it. Yeah, this is complete chaos. Their first priority seems to be taking the ammunition and the weapons off their own wounded. There's no attempt of any sort of first aid. There's certainly not anything like one would term command and control. There's no leaders there. Hundreds of unarmed kibbutz residents are killed. Hamas seizes large numbers of hostages. As word spreads of gaps in the fence, hundreds of Gazans pour through.
Many people were able to leave the Gaza Strip, including those people who weren't even part of the operation. Civilians, smugglers, criminals who had thought they could make a quick buck themselves. People would go through and just do their own thing.
There is a wave of looting.
A lot of people, simple, ordinary people, came from Gaza into the kibbutzes and into the area. Thousands entered this area. And therefore, a lot of what happened, it was not, if right or wrong, it was not happened only by the fighters.
Many of those abducted appear to have been taken by Gazan civilians rather than Hamas fighters. At kibbutz near Oz, a group of Thai labourers is caught up in the chaos. Wutun is dragged past the room where his Thai colleagues have been murdered. He is placed on a motorbike and joins a trail of people heading back towards the Gaza Strip, carrying loot and hostages. The Israelis mobilize helicopter gunships. Hamas fighters try unsuccessfully to shoot them down. The Israelis later release footage of dozens of strikes. On Israeli television, pilots admit it was difficult to distinguish gunmen from Israeli civilians.
אני באוויר, באחת הגיחות נאמר כבר שיש חטופים.
ואז מה עושים? איך מבצעים ירי על מי שחוזר לכיוון הגבול?
זו שאלה טובה, וזו דילמה סופר מורכבת.
כל ההחלטה עכשיו
עליי.
היא עליך. אין לי מי לדבר.
כן, אין לי מי לדבר.
Without guidance, pilots say they join local WhatsApp groups to identify targets.
The idea that pilots have to get information from WhatsApp groups is truly remarkable. It's a sign of the initiative that people are looking for any way that they can get the information. At the same time, this is an outrage. I mean, what kind of a way is that to fight a modern war?
The Israeli newspaper Yediot Aharonot says that at midday, the army issues a version of what is known as the Hannibal Directive.
נועל חניבל הוא נועל בלתי פורמלי, שאומרת, אוקיי, עדיף לנו שהחייל יארג ושלא יתפס חי.
The Hannibal Directive is the result of previous humiliations where Israel handed over hundreds of Palestinian prisoners in return for the release of one Israeli soldier.
להיתה הבנה שהתוצאה היותר טובה של תקרית כזאת זה חייל הרוג ולא חייל בשבי.
On October 7, it seems the Hannibal Directive may have been revived and applied even to civilian hostages.
The Air Force operated during those hours under an instruction to prevent movement from Gaza into Israel and return from Israel into Gaza. 70 vehicles were hit. At least in some of the cases, everyone in the vehicle was killed.
The Israeli military does not deny the report. Israeli first responders released footage of civilians burned in a car. The car was struck from above.
Well, to me it's inexcusable for a helicopter or any weapon system to be engaging any target if you don't know what that target is. And the footage we're looking at here, which I find very disturbing. We have a lot of people here making their way back through the breach in the wire back into Gaza. Now, my concern is, with this footage, we cannot tell whether they're Hamas gunmen or civilians or possibly hostages. And I don't believe the helicopter pilot or the machine gun operator would be able to tell either.
Israel's Channel 12 later interviews a kibbutz resident who was abducted. She describes coming under fire from a helicopter.
המסוק יורה.
עליכם.
צרורות, יורה עלינו, ואני בטוחה שזהו. זה, עכשיו אני מתה, וגמרנו, ואז אני מרימה את הראש ואני בחיים.
המחבלים נהרגו מהיר.
כל המחבלים נהרגו, לא נשאר אחד בחיים.
This footage shows the aftermath of what appears to be a similar helicopter strike. There were 9 hostages in the vehicle described in the Israeli TV report. One was killed. The other 8, including 3 children, survived. The hostages are later filmed being taken to Gaza in a second vehicle.
Even if you just use the belt-fed gun on the Apache, these big rounds have a certain area effect and obviously come at a certain rate that if you shoot at a group of people, you're most likely going to kill everyone. You are knowingly putting your own civilians at risk. I find it very disturbing using these sort of weapons in an environment where you can't distinguish and differentiate enough between who is friend and who is foe, who is a civilian, who is a combatant.
Analysis of the IUNIT's list of the dead reveals 27 hostages who died somewhere between their home and the Gaza fence in circumstances that have not been explained. Israeli security forces arrive at the site of the music festival.
עם סימן חיים! שייתן לנו סימן חיים!
שום סימן חיים? לא. היא מתה. היא מתה. היא מתה.
Police and army units storm kibbutzim. It seems that they too may have applied a version of the Hannibal directive and killed civilians. Be'eri is the largest kibbutz in the region. Israeli media reveals that 12 die there when police and army open fire on a house that contains hostages. Israel's Channel 12 speaks to two survivors.
והם הביאו פתאום טנק, ואני אומרת לאחד החיילים, תגיד, אבל אם אתם אומרים פגזים, זה לא יפגע בבני האובה? אז הוא אומר לי, לא, אנחנו רק עושים את זה בצדדים, להוריד קירות.
בא לראות טנק בתוך בערי, עושה על הכביש. אופה, היה שם איזה ירי. וואו.
פתאום בום נוראי. ואני לא מצליחה להזיז את הרגליים.
This story has been ignored by Western media.
הם נהרגו, הם נהרגו מרסיסים, הם לא נהרגו כי רצחו אותם. הם נהרגו מהירי. היה שם ירי מטורף על הבית. מטורף. טנק הגיע וירה בגזים. אז היה. אם זה קרה, זה היה. אם הם מתו כל הבני הרובה, זה רק מהירי.
Many other buildings show similar damage to the house at Be'eri.
All the footage I've seen of the Hamas assault across the border, across the fence into the kibbutzes, they're pretty much only armed with light weapons. This is RPGs, so rocket-propelled grenades and personal sidearms. This is taken from the inside of a house. Two holes in the wall here, I would say probably by some sort of heavy weapon fired against the house, most probably a tank. There's no way an RPG in Iraq would make that sort of damage. In this image here, catastrophic structural damage to the building, clearly not caused by a structural collapse from a fire. This was caused by some sort of heavy weapon system during combat. There's catastrophic structural damage to many of these buildings. This can only have happened by heavy weapon systems being used against the kibbutz itself.
The I unit calculates that 1154 Israelis and foreign nationals are killed on October 7 and in the days immediately afterwards. Of these, 256 are soldiers. 53 belong to the police and other security forces, and 63 are civilian security guards. The remaining 782 victims are unarmed. The I unit's list of the dead reveals that at least 18 are killed by Israeli ground troops. A number of other bodies are recovered from beneath rubble who died in circumstances that are unclear. In the days following October 7, journalists are shown around the kibbutzim by the Israeli army.
This is something that monsters do, not humans.
Hamas fighters and others committed crimes on October 7. The Israeli media, however, focuses not on the crimes they committed, but on crimes they did not.
I'm talking to some of the soldiers, and they say what they've witnessed as they've been walking through these different houses, these different communities, babies, their heads cut off. That's what they said. No one could expect that it would be like this, the horrors that I'm hearing from these soldiers. As I mentioned earlier, about 40 babies at least were taken out on gurneys.
The I unit's list of the dead shows no babies were killed in Kfar Aza, the kibbutz this report came from. The story was nevertheless picked up by international media and repeated by President Biden.
I've been doing this a long time. I never really thought that I would see and have confirmed pictures of terrorists beheading children.
The White House later clarifies that actually the president had not seen pictures of beheaded children. A senior Israeli military officer later speaks to journalists in front of a burnt-out house in Kibbutz Be'eri. It's the house where 12 hostages appear to have been killed during the assault by the Israeli police and army.
Inside this house were another 15 burned people, among them 8 babies in this corner. They were concentrated them, and they killed them, and they burned them.
Well, did you see?
I evacuated.
The list of the dead shows that there were no babies in the house. And Colonel Vach does not tell journalists that the casualties are almost certainly caused by Israeli forces. 2 days later, the regional head of Zaka, a voluntary organization charged with collecting bodies, gives a different account to Sky News of what happened at the same house.
And you're talking children, 2 piles of 10 children each, were tied to the back, burned to death. This is something behind, this is next level. And
I mean, it's actually indescribable, really. It's indescribable, really.
It's indescribable, and I won't describe everything that I saw.
This account is repeated by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a conversation with President Biden.
They took dozens of children, bound them up, burned them, and executed them.
The list of the dead shows 2 12-year-old twins are killed when police and army stormed the house in Be'eri. But there are no other children.
It was an interview we did with Sky Television from Britain. 2 piles, we found them in Be'eri. 2 piles of 10 children each were tied back to back and burned to death. Now, again, I mean, if we look at the death figures at Be'eri, there are only 10 children that died at Be'eri.
Not children, it's 18-year-old. So we all together, when you look at them and they're burned, you don't know exactly the ages. So you're talking about 18-year-old, 20 years old, and you just don't look on the spot identification to see the ages or something like that.
It is not the only questionable story that Yossi Landau tells about Kibbutz Be'eri.
We go further. Then we see a woman. She was lying on the floor, a puddle of blood, big puddle of blood. She was a pregnant woman. Her stomach was butchered open. The baby that was connected to the cord was stabbed, and she was shot in the back.
Kibbutz Be'eri has denied this account.
The story of the pregnant woman reported by Zaka is not relevant to Be'eri.
Yossi Landau insists he witnessed this scene at Be'eri.
If you want to see the picture, I have the picture of it.
Are you able to share the photographic evidence with us?
To show you. Yes. Where's my phone? Oh, I'm sorry. I will not put it in front of the camera.
No, that's fine. I'll come and look.
This is the knife they used.
Shot and killed, but...
Over here was the woman.
But that's the imagery after the bodies had been cleared away.
Oh. Yes. This is the baby. This is it.
I'm sorry to be graphic here, but I can't see a baby here.
You can't see the baby but this is the picture of the mother.
Okay.
For sure, you know, we didn't think when we over there, we didn't think to camera everything. We didn't have that. This wasn't in our...
The photo shows an unidentifiable piece of charred flesh. The list of the dead contains no victim that fits Yossi Landau's description. On October 7th, 2 babies die. One is killed when a bullet is fired through a door. The other dies following an emergency caesarean after the mother is shot. Neither is burned or beheaded.
you being someone who, with your own hands, with your own eyes, with your nose, you smelled this, what would you say to that person who is downplaying what took place here?
I wouldn't say anything. I would ask, please give me, he should be together with the Hamas terrorist and he should be killed because he's a part of it.
Visiting celebrities continue to be shown babies' cribs, and the world continues to be told stories about murdered babies.
When you're taking babies, cutting them and tying them together and burning them to death, you're treating them less than an animal.
1,300 people dead, murdered, babies.
These bastards put these babies in an oven and put on the oven. We found the kid a few hours later.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken describes the fate of two small children.
Family of four, a young boy and girl, 6 and 8 years old, and their parents around the breakfast table. The father has eye gouged out in front of his kids. The mother's breast cut off. The girl's foot amputated. The boy's fingers cut off before they were executed. And then their executioners sat down and had a meal. That's what this society is dealing with.
This story also comes from Yossi Landau and Zaka. An analysis of the evidence suggests that it is also untrue. Of the 782 unarmed victims of October 7, 36 are children, 13 under the age of 12. None died in the circumstances described by Antony Blinken. Media analyst Mark Owen Jones tracks the spread of such stories on the internet. He believes they serve a purpose.
So how, as Israel, do you create that balance in sort of saying, well, what we're doing is morally right, even though we're killing way more people? Well, you have to emphasize the brutality, because you can't say, well, we've killed less than Hamas. So how do you do it? Well, you try to make the significance of those individual deaths even more disgusting and objectionable. If you can activate people's sense of disgust, I think they're more likely to support, for example, dire retribution against Palestinians.
In December, Benjamin Netanyahu meets with Zaka volunteers and thanks them for speaking to the world's press. It's not just stories of murdered babies and children that are open to question. Israel's head of forensics describes to Sky News the state of adult corpses he's examined.
So many bodies were shot, but before they were shot, they were cuffed. So it's execution style. You can see stab wounds here at the back and on the head. And if you do CT, you can see that the pelvis is shattered. These are bullets inside. So he was shot, he was stabbed, he was burned, and then he was run over.
The Israelis say they recovered numerous bodies mutilated by Hamas fighters and others. But the evidence suggests some, at least, may not be Israelis. In the aftermath of October 7, large numbers of videos of the abuse and mutilation of Palestinian corpses are posted online. The Israeli government later admits that 200 of the bodies initially identified as Israelis were in fact Palestinians.
We originally said in the atrocious Hamas attack on our people on October 7th, we had the number at 1,400 casualties, and now we've revised that down to 1,200 because we understood that we had overestimated. We made a mistake. There are actually bodies that were so badly burnt, we thought they were ours. In the end, apparently, they were Hamas terrorists.
There's a lot of evidence out there that's been produced by the Israelis, which is either contradictory or potentially self-harming. If people were saying, oh, actually, we went through the different bodies and we realized some of the burned bodies were actually Palestinians and they weren't our civilians, that begs the question, why were they burned and who burned them? How were they mutilated and who mutilated them? A proper forensic investigation would have to clarify who killed them and how they were killed. Me too, me too, me too.
Israel also alleges that Hamas is guilty of widespread and systematic rape. The Israeli government has published a video attacking the UN and other global institutions for what it claims is inaction and indifference to the plight of Israeli women.
I'd like to report a crime.
Yes.
I was raped.
So sorry. We're here to help. Tell us what happened.
I was at a music festival. We heard gunfire and everyone was running. I started running and then he grabbed me. He yelled something in Arabic and then he ripped my...
Joseph, sorry to interrupt you. You said he was yelling in Arabic.
Yes.
Madeline Reese is head of an international women's rights organization.
Don't take it personally. Management decided that all violence against Israelis is legitimate resistance. So sorry.
It's a very cheap shot. Immediately upon the horrific attacks on October the 7th, there was a response from the UN, from the Commission of Inquiry, which already exists, to look into atrocities in the region, to say, we want to come and investigate. We are ready, we're willing, we're able to come and investigate. And that was blocked. That was blocked. And that's been blocked by Israel.
Hamas denies that rapes occurred on October 7.
In no case there was a proof that there was a rape. In no one case. But I am sure, based on our culture, based on our beliefs, that this cannot happen, impossible to happen.
But there are those who say they witnessed women being raped. One is a survivor from the music festival who says he saw a group of Palestinian civilians surrounding a woman.
הם היו כזה במין חצי מעגל סביבה, וזה היה בערך 30-40 מטר מאיתנו. תופסים אותה שלא תזוז, משתלטים עליה. אני כזה מסתכל בין העלים, בין הענפים, והם התחילו למשוך אותה מכל מקום, והפשיטו אותה. זה היה אונס.
The Israeli police presents an anonymous witness who described a separate rape also at the music festival.
היא הייתה בחיים, הבחורה שהם אנסו? כן.
היא הייתה בחיים? היא לא לבושה, והוא חותך לה תשד. הוא חותך לה תשד, הוא זורק את זה על הכביש, הם משחקים עם זה.
In another interview, this witness says she saw a total of 5 women raped and gunmen walking around with the severed heads of 3 women. But no forensic evidence of sexual violence has been produced. A website created by the Israeli government to document atrocities on October 7 contained just one video indicative of rape. It features the body of a young woman lying by a roadside 14 kilometers north of the site of the music festival. She is wearing no underwear. In December, this story formed the centerpiece of a New York Times investigation. But the report was undermined when the woman's sister posted on Instagram that it was untrue.
Yes, they raped. But in the case of my sister, no.
The family denied that she'd been raped. They said it would have been really difficult for her to have been raped because she was in contact with them during Hamas's attack. And that her last correspondence with them was probably about 4 minutes before she was reportedly killed, right? And so they sort of say, how could she have been, you know, shot, burnt, and raped within the space of 4 minutes? It didn't make sense.
One of the 3 authors of the report, Anat Schwartz, is a former Israeli intelligence official with little journalistic experience. She has previously liked genocidal social media posts calling for Gaza to be turned into a slaughterhouse.
I believe that there was rape. In every conflict, whenever there are men with guns intent on perpetrating violence, it is highly unlikely there will not be sexual violence. But nothing that I've seen put forward so far suggests that it was widespread and systematic. It's a very high bar to actually reach. To show that it was widespread and systematic, there would have a lot more evidence than has come to light to date, and a lot more corroborative evidence than what has been put out there.
5 months after October 7, a report by the UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict concluded there were reasonable ground to believe that conflict-related sexual violence occurred. The author stressed her report was not investigative. She urged the Israelis to permit a fully fledged investigative process and to grant, without further delay, access to the International Commission of Inquiry, which is mandated to investigate human rights abuses in Israel and the occupied territories. Israel still refuses to do so. The UN report relied largely on Israeli officials and first responders. It stated the visual evidence provided no tangible indications of rape, a conclusion supported by the I Unit's own analysis of footage and photographs. In January, the Israeli police said they were struggling to match witness accounts with known victims. The policewoman leading the inquiry told the Israeli newspaper Haaretz,
"At this stage, I have no specific bodies."
Without any credible investigation, an independent credible investigation, I don't think we can possibly say that it was widespread and systematic. Essentially, what we've got is a state has instrumentalized the horrific attacks on women in order, we believe, to justify an attack on Gaza, of which the majority suffering are other women.
In response to the events of October 7, Israel launches a bombardment of the Gaza Strip.
On October the 7th, the first thing I remember is that I was terrified. I was terrified because I know the Israeli response to that. Whenever an Israeli man killed, they're going to kill 100 or 200 Palestinians. So when I heard that the number of Israeli killed is over 1,000 people, I knew that Israel will respond in a barbaric way.
...1,154 people were killed on October 7. After 5 months of bombardment, around 31,000 are confirmed killed in Gaza. 27% are adult men, 29% adult women, and 44% children. There are many hundreds of babies among the dead. The destruction of health services in Gaza means many of the dead are uncounted, and the real death toll is likely to be far higher. Repeatedly, accounts of rape and the murder of babies by Hamas have been used to justify Israel's actions.
I hear the calls for a ceasefire. Tell me, what is a proportionate response for killing of babies? For rape women and burn them? For beheading of a child? The proportional response to October 7 massacre is a total destruction. A total destruction to the last one of the Hamas.
Killing, slaughtering women, children, babies, rapes, beheading. We're going to wipe them off the map, wipe them off the face of the earth.
This wasn't just rape. This was flat-out torture.
I don't think there's any way Israel can be expected to coexist or find some diplomatic off-ramp with these savages.
First thing I said to Netanyahu when this happened was finish them. Finish them. Don't ever forget what happened.
Sexual violence and other forms of violence are being weaponized to dehumanize an enemy. And dehumanization is important in conflict. Why? Because dehumanization lowers the threshold by which you will willingly agree to attack or harm another group of people. And how do you do that? Well, you see them as subhuman.
More than 70% of those who've died have been women and children. 70%. And we know more than 160 women a day have to give birth without adequate medical protection at all, cesareans without any sort of anesthetic. It's absolutely barbarous.
It was October 22nd, and my family were sleeping in their home. There was my father, my older brother, his wife, and his three children. There was also my younger brother, and there were my older sister, Wala, and four of her children. And there was my sister, Ala, and her children. And there was my sister, Aya, and her three children. And they were sleeping at 5 a.m. in the morning when Israel bombed my home. And they were killed. 21 of them were killed.
For the Hamas leadership, the consequences of October 7 for the Palestinian people appear to be a price worth paying for ending Israel's occupation.
October 7th has sent a very strong and clear message, well-defined message. No one can bypass the Palestinians. No one can enjoy stability or security as long as the Palestinians don't or does not enjoy their own genuine rights of independence, self-sovereignty, dignity, and freedom. Allahu Akbar!
I regret to say that I think it was a phenomenal success from their point of view. They put the Palestinian issue back on the regional and global agenda. But the wars will end sooner or later. Already people are coming out of their homes, and they're going to see what Gaza looks like today, and it's not a pretty picture. And part of this was necessary for operational reasons, and part of this was because I think Israel's been trying to make the point that this can never happen again. And beware that this is the price you will pay.
The price paid by the Palestinians is terrible. That is true. It's hefty. But pinpoint to me one struggle for liberation in which there was no costly price. Vietnam, how many millions perished in Vietnam in order for Vietnam to become free. So you see, there is no easy way. There is no small price for freedom and for independence. And the Palestinians do understand that.
They are revenging. The only thing that they do is revenge. And revenge against who? Against the Palestinian people, the civilians, the women, the children. There's gonna be a trauma that the Palestinians will never heal from.